You're listening to the Hammersley Brothers podcast. If you'd like to get started with three of our best tools, see the link in the show notes. They're free and video training is included.
Hello and welcome to the Hammersley Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week we're talking about how the dominoes of e-commerce relate to a higher average order value sale on an e-commerce site and what important steps you need to go through with the dominoes to scale this type of business. So let's get started. Hey, good morning, Ian. How are you?
Good. Yeah, good evening, Mark. Yes, I'm well. I'm still in the middle of school holidays.
Gosh, I think we're just starting here. Yeah. And we're going to go somewhere at the end of the week. Should be fun. So probably won't do a podcast next week, to be honest. Because we'll be in Australia somewhere.
So when it's my holiday, we still do a podcast. When it's your holiday, everything stops.
Well, you were in your beautiful holiday house, weren't you, with the internet Caravan. And all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Chalet. I'll be in Chalet.
Chalet, yeah. To be honest, it's probably the nicest caravan you could probably get, to be honest. For those who don't know,
it's the best North Wales has to offer.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Warren. We should mention it. Go to Abersoch. Stay at the Warren. Rent Ian's chalet.
If anyone buys another chalet, apparently I get £10,000.
Oh,
or a jet ski.
Let's go. Oh, wow.
Yeah, give me a jet ski. So everyone mentions the Hammersley
Mention
Brothers.
Ian.
I'd like a jet ski.
Mention Ian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want the £10,000.
You did have a jet ski
for a
while. What happened to that?
I've still got it. It's like a Miami Vice 1992 neon stripes.
Sounds awesome.
I think it's actually our dad's neighbours. That's how cool we are. Jeff's.
Anyway,
it's
I don't
Jeff's,
think people...
who's 80. Are they
I don't think people
in Jeff's
tune in
jet ski?
For
Why?
Jet skis. Well, to be honest, we were talking before and we thought we'd continue that chat. So like a fireside chat on the dominoes for e-commerce, which we've been talking through for different businesses. And I thought we'd talk through the dominoes for a higher price purchase, which
it is different.
And I was talking to you a little bit before about my evolution of my thinking around high price purchases and what I do differently now. And so I thought we'd just start extending that conversation, really, because I thought it was interesting, because I know a lot of people we work with sell something. I mean, when we say high priced, we're probably talking over anything over like $500, £500. Like
at least.
Up
I
there.
Think.
At least.
I think
at least. It's more of a considered purchase.
Let's just explain why it's slightly different to normal e-commerce purchases. So, you know, the example that I always used to give is, you know, if you're selling a t-shirt online, it's like £20, $20 t-shirt. It's a different type of purchase than a £2,000 sofa. You know, so it's very different. So you can't expect it to happen in the same time frame. So two fundamental things different about it. The cheap, you know, the cheap product versus the higher average order value purchase. The time to buy is a lot longer. So, you know, the t-shirt you might have, I don't know, a couple of days thinking time, and whereas the sofa might take, you know, a couple of months. So that's the first differentiation, is the time to buy is longer. And the second thing is that it's much more of a considered purchase, which is what you were saying before. So the convincibility or the desirability, depending on what you're selling, is a lot greater. You have to go a lot further with it. And so you can't expect people to just rock up to the site and go, oh, I'm going to go through all the dominoes, six dominoes in one go. And I'm going to go straight to the purchase. You know, it doesn't work like that because it's a lot longer. So it's the same philosophy of the domino. Go through the same thing. It's actually five dominoes. If anyone's no, it's six. It is six dominoes. But wrong.
Yeah,
there.
Well done.
I did your trick. I counted six. But so yeah, that's the main difference: the length of time to buy, and then the depth of the emotion around the job to be done. Is much greater.
Yeah,
because it's more of a risk, isn't it? More things to go wrong.
Yeah, and So shall I tell people where I was before and where I am now? So when I first started working with a lot of people with higher average order values, like that, like I had a lot of success actually. And I came along and I said, like, let's just increase your average, your data capture rate. Let's set up a better welcome series and let's increase the frequency of the offer architecture. And that worked quite well, to be honest. But then I started working with some other people and I was like trying to use the same playbook for those. And what I realized was the ones where it worked is that we were effectively, they're the last dominoes, like the offer architecture and those kind of things. And if you are sending more emails and capturing more emails, it only works if you've built up the value to exploit, basically. And so when I took that playbook to some people and said, look, just capture more data and then we'll send more emails, we'll do more offer architecture, it didn't move the needle as much as it had in the other ones. And that kind of left me scratching my head to think, well, why was that? What was the difference? And what it comes down to is that with a bigger purchase, you have to do a better job at letting the purchaser realize or visualize themselves experience the product or getting the value out of the product. So an example of that, like Ian and I working with quite a high-end bike frame manufacturer, and they make very expensive bikes, or well, not that expensive bikes, but like high-end bikes. And we were saying to them, you know,
like 8,
you need
000,
to
about 8,000
yeah, about
8,000
pounds. Yeah. So you need to do a lot better at telling the stories of the customers so that the future customers can see themselves in their shoes. So that's kind of like with case study videos, stories, you know, aspirational style content, those kind of things. And also one thing they weren't doing very well was the higher purchase for the bike manufacturer. He needs to create a lot more kind of hero content of people using the bikes and experiencing the bikes, going through the process with the bikes, so people can fall in love with the bikes that they want to buy it. And also a lot of the higher price purchases, they'll look at the product and then they'll go jump straight onto YouTube and see if people reviewed it. So you've got to then have that due diligence so people can go due diligence and do the product and understand it. So you'll see the big players in big at high average order value stuff, they'll have that backup of the people who've reviewed the product on YouTube. And like, if you don't have that kind of hero content of the higher price stuff, which is stuff that allows people to fall in love with it, to allow them to see themselves in the position of it, then capturing the email address and sending more offers doesn't work, because effectively you've got nothing to harvest. So in fact, what we've been talking about, the dominoes, which is, and the reason we call them the dominoes is because people go through them. And if you miss out a domino, it doesn't work. For a higher average order value, the dominoes are actually even more important because the sale is spread out and done over a longer period. So if so effectively your dominoes are bigger, they're falling further and they're taking longer to fall over. So if you miss one out, you're just not going
to
affect anything.
You can't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also, you have to repeat them continually. You can't just, you know, you almost have to repeat all the dominoes in all of the touch points again, because it takes so long. So take the example of that that bike manufacturer, made a mountain bike, road bike company. Sometimes they could, I think they were saying, like, people were coming looking at the site like every day for like 6 months, you know, touching it, thinking about it all the time. But you didn't know this. But what I thought would be useful to do is just take what was happening with that company that we found when we were looking at the dominoes. The first one was the positioning. And just to say what was happening. So there was like something like 80% of their landing pages was three pages on the website. It was three pages. It was like one of them was the collection page, one was a particular bike page, and one was the home page, I think. And when you first landed on the site, there was no positioning at all. There was no, I mean, this was a bike company that had got loads of fantastic endorsements with like British athletes, and you know, they sponsored all sorts of really great teams. None of that, you couldn't see any of that. There was no positioning there at all. So if you'd never heard of this company, you would have no idea whether or not it was like Rally selling a bike for, you know, 80 quid, You know, if you just think about bikes, you think about, you can go and buy a road bike for, you know, £80 versus like up to like £28,000 and in between. So there's no, you've got to position who you are. I'll go one stage further back, actually. There's a, for these purchases where the average order value is so high, there's another domino, really, which the positioning domino starts in Instagram. So like the homepage of Instagram is really the homepage of the site. So all of that positioning has to be really, really evident in the Instagram. Again, for this particular business, they've got loads of great stories, lots of great people using their bikes and raving about them, but that wasn't on their Instagram page at all. On their Instagram page, it was just, here's a new cog, isn't it great? Here's a new picture of a bike. And there was no emotive stories of people using the bikes and going through this great experience of fitting them and then using them and racing them. So that was a problem, the first thing. And then when you got to the site, there was zero positioning at all of who this business was to reinforce it. The second one, which is the navigational flow, which is trying to find the right product, that was also a big problem, because if you'd often land on a particular type of, I think it was a particular gravel bike. Well, they've got like 12 different gravel bikes, and they've got like 10 different road bikes and 10 different track bikes. The chances of you finding the right bike first time is nigh on impossible. And also, even if you did find the right bike, you wouldn't know it's the right bike. So the thing that they should have at the top was this find the perfect bike in under 20 seconds. Take our, essentially like a little quiz, like a bike finder quiz. So that was the second problem that was wrong. And that was even before you move on to the job to be done and the anxieties. But like the job to be done here is actually quite a subtle, interesting one. Because the job to be done isn't to buy a bike. The job to be done is to actually have that amazing emotional feeling the first time you ride that bike and you're going up that hill with your mates, and that feeling of when your mates see the bike for the first time and you, oh my God, that's the job to be done. And so it's understanding that from an emotional perspective, and you've really got to lean into that. And that wasn't there either. That emotion, that feeling of what it is. And then the anxiety, which is really, well, can I afford it? Can I justify this? It's probably the biggest anxiety. But if you've got the job to be done right, you can just nail that anxiety. There's always a cheaper bike to go and buy. So you have to get that job to be done right. It's absolutely a desirability play and then a convincibility play.
Yeah.
And that's key. And then particularly, obviously the fifth domino, go on, go for it.
I was going to say, particularly if they're coming to the site and they're basically saying, I want to fall in love with one of the bikes, but I don't know how to. I don't know how to do it. You know, like I'm coming with this kind of like, I want to treat myself. I want to get the ultimate bike. I want to do it, but I don't know how to get started with this. I can see 20 bike frames. You know, what content and method is there to unpack that desire and turn it into something where they kind of go, oh, I realize for me, it's this bike. That's what's going to happen. Before you do that, no amount of pestering on email or sales is going to make them move, because they go, well, I see you've got a sale on. I'm sure you've got one, but like, which is one I'm not in love with any. It's basically like they like going speed dating and asking and trying to hassle them to say, you need to take one of these people home. And you're like, well, I'm not in love with anybody yet. You know, it's too quick.
Well,
it's you haven't found it.
Yeah. I think what we'll say, I think just to put something on the table here is that we're not saying, and for this particular business as well, we're actually saying you definitely do need to think about the reason to act now. Like, what is the, you know, we do need to have something to flush them out. But we can't bypass the other dominoes. It's very important to build those up. And I think, you know, it is critical to treat the site like a lead gen site, really. You know, because there's a lot of conversation that needs to happen. But it's also like, it's like the remarketing's key. So, you know, it's much better to hit one person like 9 times in this case rather than 9 people once. You know, so as soon as they come to the site, we do try and get their email, but we're also, because we want to re-emphasize and reinforce these dominoes, you know, the job to be done, the anxieties, having to find the right bike, trust and credibility, the story, all those. We want to do that with not just email, but also on Instagram and Meta and Google. You know, we want remarketing there as well, you know, because it's so much more powerful to go and re-emphasize these. And this is an example with bikes, but it's the same with like sofas and any high ticket item. It's exactly the same. Would you add anything else to the remarketing element then?
Well,
to this?
I think for remarketing and for everything, you kind of have to have, you know, you have to sit down and go, well, I've got these buyers. So for the bike company, he might have three types of buyers, maybe different age groups and different motivations. And maybe for a sofa, you maybe got a couple of buyer types, maybe just one. And once you know who those buyers are, if you were a super salesperson and had a physical store, a super salesperson would go, if I get, you know, a middle-aged woman coming in here and looking at that sofa, and I tell her these three things, and I explain this thing, I'm 90% likely to get the sale. So it's understanding what that particular buyer type is looking for and what message you have to put in front of them. So effectively, if someone's gone to look at gravel bikes, for example, then obviously if they're into gravel bikes, they're into a certain type of racing, they're into a certain type of riding. Most people in gravel bikes are interested in achieving this, and therefore this is the type of content I need to get in front of them repeatedly, and I want to make our bike a key part of that solution to getting to where they want to go to. So it's kind of like unpacking, not just, you know, it's not just kind of like telling them a story, it's telling them which story and understanding exactly what you've got to say to that person. So there's like a lady I work with in Australia, she sells kayaks, and she's, you know, she's probably got maybe three or four buyer types of people who buy kayaks for different activities. Some people are very social, they're just kind of doing it as a hobby. Some people are going to be more serious and going on a big trip with it. Some people want to see themselves perhaps as doing a big trip. And so if she can start to work out which of the buyer there potentially are, she could send them the story or the case study or the hero piece that would convince them to buy. And therefore, she knows that that is then going to do a lot of the work of convincing them that these particular kayaks that they can only get from her are the kayaks to buy, and it's worth paying for. And therefore, when she does her offers and she does her emails and things like that, she's much more likely to actually get a response to it. But the trouble is if you don't sit down and work out who your particular buyer types are, like if I sent a case study about someone taking the kayak up to I don't know, the River Nile and riding on the River Nile, and that was for like a middle-aged husband and wife team who want to occasionally go to the beach, just go, they're going to think this kayak's far too advanced for us and I'm not going to buy it. So like you really need to understand who you're talking to, and you're never going to sit down with 100% of the buyer type, but usually 80% of the people who buy something from you can be fit into three categories, two categories, four categories, depending on what you're selling. And then you can start having content for those, and you can start to understand who they are. Because with a higher price purchase, you do have the time to segment them and talk to them and understand who they are, so that then you can actually understand which content to sell them, which is very different than if you're selling bedding, for example, which tends to be done over one day or 2 days. You know, you have to sell them the same bedding over time. So
yeah,
that's kind of how
I
look at
it. A lot of these, like bikes or kayaks, I mean, these are very much like a lifestyle choice, aren't they? They're symbols of something much greater than the product itself. And that emotion, that aspiration of being the sort of person that goes up these mountains and these bikes, that's what you're really selling. And I think it just takes an alarming amount of time compared to a normal e-commerce. And you cannot be impatient. And so there's a couple of other points I'll add to this. So number one, you have to look for leading indicators. So if you're running Meta and Google ads for these high average order value purchases, what you'll find is that if you spend a load of money today and you're expecting the sales to come in tomorrow, you're going to be really disappointed because it can take, you know, 40, 50, 60 more days to get the sale. You'll find that you go a bit like this. You have this sort of like up and down, like you'll spend loads of money on ads and you'll get nothing, and then you'll lower the budget and then you'll start to get some revenue, you know, like a month later. And so you'll start to advertise again and nothing will happen, and you'll start to have this wave approach and you just won't scale. You'll never get past that point that you become efficient. Your marketing budgets are like, you know, 25-30% of your total revenue. So you have to have leading indicators. So you've got to know things like how many emails we're catching, how many leads we're getting is a leading indicator. If you have a business that sells samples, we've got a company that we're working with that's selling tiles, like really expensive floor tiles. It's the same thing. High average order value, like £3,000, can take a month or two for people to make the decision. If they did it purely on the sale, like they, you know, the first of all, the ads are not linked to the sale at all because it's so disjointed. You know, it's so tight. They have to do it by the samples they get and the emails they're capturing. That's what they are monitoring ads against, and the performance of ads. That's the other really key thing. The second thing is going back to that that bike story. That guy who was selling these really high end, lovely bikes. Somebody said to him, he got on the phone and he said, "You know what? I've been coming on your site every day for 6 months." But of course, the guy didn't know this. But the technology that he's got now, he's on Shopify, he's got Klaviyo, and you can see this now. You could see the fact that this guy would be on the site. Imagine, and I said to him, imagine if you had a physical showroom and this guy walked in your showroom every day and went over to that red bike in the corner and looked at it every day he came in. You know, obviously you'd notice this and you'd start to talk to him and have a conversation because you'd be like, "Oh my God, this guy's coming every day." This is what's happening without people even realizing it on the site, on the e-commerce site. I mean, every day is extreme, but people become, if you think about it, something that you really aspire to buy. I was looking for paddle boards, because I said I was paddleboarding last week. I was looking for paddle boards, and it's the sort of thing that I go, "Oh, I'm going to go and look at the paddle boards again. I've got to start that journey again." And it's exciting, that journey of finding something is part of the joy of going through that process of doing it. And that's why if you get their email address and you're linking it up correctly, so you've got the behavioural triggers, what should be happening then is that it's flagging up that this guy or girl has come on the site every day looking at this particular category of bikes or this particular product page. And actually, we should probably send them an SMS or actually give them a ring, because they're probably really bloody hot, probably really just waiting for that little nudge. And it's like, I always think you have to sort of, we've said this before, like put them in this like warm holding pen, because they're just not going to buy there. And then you have to have somewhere that you can capture their email, put them into a whole nice little remarketing like group there, and then eventually they'll put the hand up because there'll be some sort of trigger. And that's either like a limited edition run or early bird offer, or there's a deal on the table. But it can take months, and you just got to nurture it. If you get it right, you know, what's a great thing about high average order value is the cost of acquisition is massive. Like if you're selling a t-shirt for, you know, you've got like a 40% margin on a t-shirt, you know, or well, that's probably pretty low. But let's say it's a 50% margin on a t-shirt, you know, you're selling it for £20. You've only got a tiny amount to spend. If you've got 40, 50, or even 30% margin on an £8,000 bike, you know, you've got like thousands of pounds to spend on cost of acquisition if you want to. So the rewards are there. You just got to get it in your head that they're going to take a lot longer. And you have to re-emphasize these dominoes over and over and over again.
I think the difficulty is that people tend to freak out with their marketing because if you've not got that leading indicator, and if you're not selling samples, it's hard to have an exact leading indicator. I mean, and it's not easy, but you just have to lean into your traffic and you have to lean into your lists when it's the right time. Usually there's some seasonality to most of these businesses when people tend to buy. And really, there's two things. So first of all, you said about building that pen. So building that pen where you can then warm them up and flush them out and understand that the people are coming onto the site over and over. And that's great. But that's probably the mistake that I made is that I focused on the pen so much rather than actually making sure that there was more people coming into that pen in the first place. So if you can understand what your pen is, your kind of like box that you're putting people in to warm up, then you can understand what you need to do to keep growing the business. So there's two parts to it. There's putting good people in the pen, and then there's flushing out people, there's harvesting people in the pen. And what I realized was running some of our businesses is that I have a much better response at talking to people and starting conversations with people if they are convinced that we can do what we say we can do, right? So like, I know that sounds super stupidly simple, but it took me a long time to work out. So like, people would follow one of our businesses on Instagram and I would go and, you know, say, hey, hi Ian, thanks for following us on Instagram. What are you doing? What are you doing? And what are you looking to buy a bike or whatever the business was selling? And the response, the likelihood of them responding was massively increased by me already convincing them up from convincing content on Instagram with the things that they needed to see. Like, if you can imagine, it's almost like when you go to Turkey and you go to restaurants and everybody's standing them outside the restaurant and say, hey, come into my restaurant, we've got the best view, right? But if I've already read in a guidebook or seen on YouTube that the best restaurant in this little village is this one, and I go to the village and someone says, hey, come in, I'm going to go in, I'm going to be much more responsive to coming in to that restaurant or even looking at the menu because I've already seen some stuff. Like, it's a two-part focus in that if you're finding that, yes, you're getting people to talk to and yes, you're having conversations, but if you're having conversations with people who are stubborn, reluctant, and not that interested, it's most likely that your content that got them to that position wasn't good enough to kind of warm them up enough to even have a conversation. Because you're effectively, you've got to sell them the conversation first, which is physical time on their point, and it's basically an investment from them. The first investment they've got to make is actually agreeing to talk to you. And so if they're not convinced that you can even be in a conversation with you, like if I'm walking past that restaurant, I look over the restaurant, there's nobody in it, I don't know anything about the restaurant, and the guy's hassling me, I'm just going to go, I'm sorry, I don't want to talk to you, I'm just going to walk on. So that it's not just about following everybody back on Instagram and trying to start a conversation with them, because they just, it'll be like pulling teeth. Like, you've got to convince them in the first place.
Yeah.
That you are the person to have a conversation with. And so you've got to look further upstream.
I'll just add a few little bits that sort of practically, because we're talking to the bike guys. And I think, because I know when I looked at the kayaking site that you were mentioning, I thought there was a real lack of brand positioning. And, you know, considering this was supposed to be one of the best kayaks in the world, it just didn't feel positioned correctly. And going back to the bike guys, what they do is that they, because a lot of, if you sponsor an event, so you know there's loads of events, like there's loads of things going on all the time, you know, for, let's say it's kayaking, and let's say it's obviously bikes, there's all sorts of events happening all the time, but you can't just sponsor an event. And actually the value is not just sponsoring an event, the value is the content and stories you get out of being involved in that event, because people are using your equipment. So you have to really think about opportunities that you can tell your story in a convincing way and get other people to tell it for you. So go to the bike events that you have sponsored with your cameras and you know, and it doesn't need to cost the earth. You could probably spend, you know, 4,000 quid for a day and have enough content for a year by planning it and going and doing these little videos of people that are using your bikes and how it feels, and you'll have so much there. But it's about positioning you, aligning yourself that you're not just selling a product. You're not a box shifter. There's a whole story and a belief about what you're doing, and be where your customers are,
and be doing what they want you to do.
I think that's it. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say to Ian, like, remember when we've been to shows with some of our businesses, and we've sponsored shows, we've sponsored exhibitions, and we've sponsored different things, and often when we've just sponsored it and then we've been a name on the top, we haven't really got any business from it at all. And I think there, when you've got limited budget and you're a small company, that's almost, it's okay. I mean, it's kind of like brand awareness, but it's not going to do anything. But if you've gone to that exhibition and, or gone to the show or gone to the race and the winner has won on your bike, or somebody has done a personal best on your bike or something like that, and that gets seen, that is more of a story than you just saying, oh, hey, this great event you went to at the weekend, we were sponsor of it. It doesn't necessarily move people into your warming pen, because it's kind of like, well, who are you? I don't know, you know, who you stand for. So when you've got to be very careful where you put your money.
You have. And I think you know, the old school way, because you can't really build. This is not an exact thing we're about to say, but it's a lot harder to build a brand for a higher average order value, desirable purchase on Google. You really have to be on Meta. That's where the story starts, where the brand starts, and then you're mopping up traffic in Google that you're creating. And I know that's not a black and white science at all, because we have grown loads of brands on Google, but the ones that we've grown on Google tend to be slightly more problem solving, lower average order value purchases, where there's a convincibility play that you're getting in the way of a need. Whereas, you know, what are you going to do on Google for that bike manufacturer that's selling bikes for $8,000? You're going to go and bid on, you know, mountain bike, you know, it's obviously, you're not
bloody expensive bike.
It's just stupid. You know,
it's not really where it is.
Obscenely expensive mountain bike could be a term, but that's the equivalent of Joan doing a bloody billboard and, you know, doing an ad with just the brand. I mean, it's you have to be in a place that you can let other people tell the stories that you're trying to tell. And it's a fantastic opportunity now because of what's happening.
You know, the gallery that we work with in the UK, so big gallery, lots of art, lots of big artists there. And, you know, they moved to a new site and they did well and they started lots of conversations. And the conversations took them, you know, further, and they're doing more emails and better emails. But I think they are also missing that hero content, like the stories about people buying the art, getting them delivered to their houses, where it's looking, collections, who's a collector. Like, they are missing those hero pieces, because, and I know this because, I mean, obviously they're in the UK and I'm over in New Zealand and I'm on their email list, and it's not setting me alight from the content. It's basically just saying, here's some new art we've got this month, and here's some more art we've got this month. But it's like, well, so what? Like, if I was a collector of art, like, what are my aspirations as a collector? Why should I follow this business? And I presume it's something to do because you've got a better collection than other people. Maybe your collection's rising in value more than other people's. That you've got like some pieces from each area. I've got no idea, but like, there must be hero content around that aspirations of their particular buyer. So people goes, I want to do what that guy's done, or I want to do what that buyer's done, or I want to be that. And it's not necessarily what's in this month, which is also important, but it's like, well, what is it about your collection that's going to help me as a collector become the collector I want to be? And like, that would be my hero content that I would use on Instagram, in the emails so that when I did do my conversation starters and I did do my times of offers and you know, last low stock emails, things like that, they would become much more responsive because of the hero content that the
You've
list
primed
is
them. You've primed them, them, yeah, much more, haven't you?
Yeah, and I think that's
which is
a
positioning
big thing that is missing in a lot of higher average order value purchases, which is, it's obvious when we explain it and it seems simple when we explain it, but it is actually more nuanced when you actually sit down and have to do it. But it's just because it's nuanced, it's still an essential piece. It's absolutely essential for you to do, even though it's hard. Because without it, you are basically feeding on the people who are already convinced that they want to buy. And your website is effectively an order taker website for the few people who have convinced themselves that they already want to buy your kayak or they already want to buy your bike because they've seen somebody else. But that is word of mouth. And word of mouth marketing is not scalable because you can't control when someone recommends a product to somebody else or someone sees it. And so therefore you're going to be stuck in that cycle of mediocrity, which we don't want, do we?
No, we don't. No, we certainly don't. Who wants that?
Yeah. Nobody.
Yeah. No.
Is there anything else you want to cover on?
One final thing about word of mouth. There's one final thing about word of mouth, which is it's relevant to this. The higher the average order value of the product, you do tend to get more word of mouth naturally. Because people go through, they want to shout about it because they want to make them feel that
they bought something expensive. They want to show it.
Yeah, they want to show off. Mm. Take the mountain bike, take the kayak, take the sofa. You know, in each of those cases, they are literally a walking billboard. Because you get the bike, everybody wants to know what bike have you got. Everyone wants to talk about it. Stay with the kayak. You all go kayaking with your mates. Or with biking with your mates, and you get the sofa. You want to show your sofa off. Oh, where do you get the sofa from? It's amazing. So there is that effect. I always think, bear that in mind when it comes to setting your marketing budgets. You know, because what you don't, you might not get lifetime customer value on the kayak, but you get value of people having the kayak and going and using it within their social groups. That definitely has an effect on the future marketing. So there's a contribution of each sale which should go into future marketing.
And then the margin calculator sheet, I usually at the very least put 1.1 into the lifetime value, even if it's a business where I know that no one's going to buy another sofa, just because 1 in 10 people tend to recommend someone else. And otherwise, you can't have a lifetime value of 0, which is unfair to the marketing budget, to be honest.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you very much, Ian.
You
too,
Mark.
That was more fireside chat on that one.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it was longer.
Have a good evening.
All right. Cheerio. See you next week.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.